ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So reading today from the sixth canto, chapter number 2, chapter entitled Ajamil Delivered by the Vishnu Dutas, text number 36 and 37.
Vimuchyatam imam bandham avidya kama karma jam sarva bhuta sur chanto maitra karuna atmavan mochaye grastam atmanam yoshin mayatma mayaya vikridito yayaivaham pridamraga ivadamaha adama. So fallen.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Because of identifying oneself with the body, one is subjected to desires for sense gratification, and thus one engages in many different types of pious and impious action. This is what constitutes material bondage. Now I shall disentangle myself from my material bondage, which has been caused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead's illusory energy in the form of a woman. Being a most fallen soul, I was victimized by the illusory energy, and I become like a dancing dog led round by a woman's hand. Now I shall give up all lusty desires and free myself from this illusion. I shall become merciful, well-wishing friend of all living entities and always absorb myself in Krishna consciousness. Purport. This should be the standard of determination for all Krishna conscious persons. A Krishna conscious person should free himself from the clutches of Maya, and he should also be compassionate to all others suffering in these clutches. The activities of the Krishna consciousness movement are meant not only for oneself, but for others also. This is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. One who is interested in his own salvation is not as advanced in Krishna consciousness as one who feels compassion for others and who therefore propagates the Krishna consciousness movement. Such an advanced devotee will never fall down, for Krishna will give him special protection. That is the sum and substance of the Krishna consciousness movement. Everyone is like a play toy in the hands of the illusory energy and is acting as she moves him. One should come to Krishna consciousness to release oneself and also to release others. Seeking the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas. So we are narrating the pastimes of Ajamil. And in this particular chapter, we see how Ajamil is in the mood of regret. The last few verses are showing the intense regret that Ajamil is now feeling after he has come into contact with the Vishnu Dutas. So the moment we come into contact with a bona fide spiritual master or a pure devotee, the transformation in our heart starts to take place. And this is exactly what happened with Ajamil. Once Srila Prabhupada was going for a morning walk in New Delhi, and Gurudas Swami at that time, now Gurudas Prabhu, asked Srila Prabhupada, what does it mean when we say unknowingly, when we do a particular action unknowingly? And Srila Prabhupada replied, giving an example of a person who is to be a smoker. So the smoker has now given up this habit of smoking. But again he comes into the association of people who are smoking. And then he starts to smoke again. So the initial period when he is beginning to smoke, he feels regret in his heart. And if he genuinely feels regret in his heart, Srila Prabhupada is explaining, then he's excused. But not that, now I become a devotee and I can do whatever I want. So in such a case, he's a rascal. So Srila Prabhupada was emphasizing how if a person really, genuinely from the bottom of his heart, regrets whatever activities he has done, then Krishna forgives him and pushes him once again onto the path of devotional service. So what to talk about Ajamil? Even a great demon like Kamsa was feeling regret in his heart. So we understand from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam how when the last child of Devaki, it's actually Yogamaya, after Lord Krishna was already transported by Vasudev to Gokul and he had come back, and then the watchman became aware that there was a child that was born, he immediately went to Kamsa and told Kamsa that a child has been born. So Kamsa could not sleep the whole night because he was expecting that this eighth child of Devaki would now be born, and the moment it is born, I should lay my hands on it and kill it. So he was in a completely state of confusion and bewilderment. And when this watchman came and told him that this child has been born, immediately Kamsa rushed out with his hair in disarray towards the prison cell of Vasudev and Devaki. And the moment he came over there, he grabbed the child with his hand. And Devaki, being a mother, naturally, although she was not the mother of this baby girl, immediately fell at the feet of Kamsa and told Kamsa that, why are you doing this? Why are you wanting to harm this baby girl? You've taken away all my sons, just this girl, and this girl is not going to harm you. In fact, she will become your daughter-in-law. So the Prabhupada explains in the purport that this is the nature of a political woman. And because Devaki was born in a family of politicians, she had this political inclination. So first she told Kamsa that it doesn't become you to be killing a woman. And then when he saw that Kamsa was not reciprocating to that particular statement, she said that, why should you, she'll become your daughter-in-law. So he started appealing to his good senses. So first, the nature of a person is repression. That means you hit a person on the head and tell him that this is required to be done. And when the person doesn't reciprocate, then you go out and start pleading with that person. So Devaki was trying to apply this practice, and Srila Prabhupada was pointing out that this is the nature of a political person. And Kamsa still was not heeding to her request. And again, Devaki was making so many different types of appeals to Kamsa. And then the time came when Kamsa decided that now enough is enough, I should just kill this child. That's a girl or whether it's a boy. So he grabbed the child, he went on his knees, grabbed the child in one hand, and was about to dash it to the floor. And all of a sudden, this child slipped out of his hands and manifested the form of Durga in all her opulence, eight hands, carrying different weapons, very, very effulgent looking. And the moment Kamsa saw that there was actually Durga Devi standing in front of him, he became completely bewildered. And immediately he fell at the feet of Kamsa, he fell at the feet of Devaki and Vasudev, begging for forgiveness. And Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that actually Kamsa was a worshipper of Lord Shiva and Durga. And the moment he saw that Durga had manifested from the body of Devaki, he thought that there must be some transcendental power that must have been given to Devaki. Otherwise, how can Durga manifest from a body? So she must be special. And immediately he fell down at the feet of Devaki and Vasudev and started begging for forgiveness, saying that, please, please forgive me. I'm such a rascal. And then he started preaching a philosophy to Devaki Vasudev, saying that, what can be done? All the children that have been killed, actually I have not killed them. They have been killed by destiny. It was destined that they should die. I'm actually not responsible. I'm your brother, so you should forgive me for whatever I have done. And Srila Prabhupada explains that because of the mercy of the Lord, Kamsa started feeling regret in his heart. And then his path of gaining spiritual knowledge started getting opened out. So even a demon like Kamsa, if he feels regret in his heart, then it is an opportunity for him to start making spiritual progress. And similarly, in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada explains in the pastime of Narad Muni explaining to King Prachinabharishad that a person transmigrates, or living entity transmigrates through various bodies. Sometimes you may get a body of a demigod, sometimes you may get a body of a chandala, sometimes you could get a body of a king, sometimes you could be a pauper, sometimes you could get a body of an animal or an insect. But the moment that living entity comes into contact with a bona fide spiritual master and takes shelter of that person, then he starts regretting for all his past lives. And such a regret is very good, Srila Prabhupada says, because regret starts purifying the heart. The purification process actually begins with regret. And actually all of us, more so my case, we have so many things to regret about. Before we came into Krishna consciousness, all the activities that we did, all the people with whom we associated with, of course, we were ignorant, but still, that is not an adequate compensation to the heart to keep telling us that we were ignorant. Because even when we become devotees, we find that we have these proclivities for sense gratification. We still want to indulge in those same activities again and again and again. Might call ourselves as a devotee, practicing Krishna consciousness for so many years. But still, we have that desire for sense gratification which is so deep-seated in our heart and keeps manifesting itself time and again. So this process of regret is required for all of us. And particularly those of us who have been in the movement for some years and we are given some extra responsibilities in terms of either managing people or in terms of managing resources. Management is by itself a very difficult task. And Srila Prabhupada, in his own life, he would want to be rid of management. He would tell his GBC that now I have appointed you as the GBC members. Please take the responsibility of management so that I can concentrate on translating the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he realized that management by itself is such a great drain on one's energy, particularly the spiritual energy. So how important it is for us to realize that yes, this is one of the aspects of devotional service. If we are having this particular ability to be managing people or to be managing resources, we have to do it. But we have to realize that because of this inner desire within us to be always seeking, wanting to manage people and resources, we could get attached to this. Even after we come into Krishna consciousness, there is this tendency within us to dovetail our propensities for managing resources and people into managing resources and people in Krishna consciousness. And unless and until we are doing this with a very, very clear consciousness, management can become so dangerous. We could get attached to it. And when we get attached to managing people and managing resources in Krishna consciousness, like when we are doing this in material life outside, we have an opportunity. Krishna consciousness gives us an opportunity to come over here and then start focusing on chanting the holy name, associating with devotees, reading the scriptures, right? So we have an outlet. So we are doing this outside, but then here we are doing some other activities. So we are not so much... So we are not so much affected. But the moment we start doing this in Krishna consciousness, then The real danger is that if we get attached to it, then we don't have an outlet. Right? So the only outlet that we have in Krishna consciousness is to get attached to chanting and to hearing. Yeah. Then it will negate the effects that management has on our spiritual lives. Yeah. So it is so important that we balance our lives in such a way that we understand that management by itself will not make us advance in Krishna consciousness. If we do not have the other aspects of Krishna consciousness also very much fixed, associating with devotees, really in the mood of Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarorapi Sahishnunam, Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. Because when we are managers, then we really do not apply this particular principle in our day-to-day activities. We want to control people. And in order to control people, you really can't be all the time manifesting this particular aspect of Srinadapi Sunichena. How do you get things done otherwise? This is normally the mentality that comes upon a person. Yeah. And we forget that actually, although subconsciously we are aware that what are we finally? We are only instruments in the hands of the spiritual master. But when we are getting into hardcore management, we forget that it is actually we who are not managing, but it's Krishna who is managing. And then we start really thinking that without me, how can things go on? How can things function? So there's a great inherent danger in getting into management in Krishna consciousness. It's so important for us to have a proper balance in terms of the other activities of our spiritual life. And there's always a justification that comes into our mind that management is also, Krishna has put me in this particular position because I have this particular nature, I have this particular qualification, I have this particular ability. And I can do so much for Srila Prabhupada by being a good manager. Right? I remember once, His Holiness Radhana Swami was mentioning in a class about a particular manager who was such a good manager, really good manager. And he would do his seva very, very nicely. And then he got so much involved in his management that even during japa time, he would be doing management. He would be attending telephone calls. He would be answering emails. This email is something that becomes such an addiction that, you know, that earlier when you would wait for a postman to be coming, you knew that the postman comes only at a fixed time. But an email now could come to you at any time of the day, any time of the night. Yeah, because people from all over the world are answering to your emails, right? And what is like night today in the US is actually daytime over here and the other way. And there are people all the time on the computers responding to emails, right? And you can justify to yourself that I should respond to an email within 1 hour of receiving it. Unlike in the case of a postman who delivers a letter and then you have to write it by hand, you have to reply, then you have to put it in an envelope, then you have to reach it to a post office and intervening, there used to be at least 4 or 5 days delay. And then, of course, the transit time. So 10 days is the time by which here, in 10 seconds, a person could be receiving an email, right? So this has further increased our thought process that unless and until I respond to this email fast, what will the other think of me? He'll think that I'm an incompetent manager. And then he starts compromising on his sadhana. Right? So management by itself is very good. But how we ensure that at the same time we have certain restrictions in our life to ensure that there are certain things that do not interfere with my sadhana. Most importantly, the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And nowhere, when we take vows before the spiritual master, before the fire and before the deities, when we are getting initiated, nowhere do we say that I take a vow that I shall be a good manager. Right? I take a vow that I shall chant at least 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra every day. I vow to follow the four regulative principles. Right? And I vow that I shall try to be a good servant the servant or the servant in the moment of Srila Prabhupada. So these are the vows that we are taking. Not that I vow to be a good manager. Because this basic propensity is within us to control people. I remember when I was working for Siemens, the organization structure was such that a person, the lowest category was a worker. Right? In worker also, we had like 8 grades, W1 to W8. Then from worker's grade, he moves to staff grade. Then there we had 8 grades, S1 to S8. And then we have 2 executive grades, E1 and E2. Then we come to the management grade, M1 to M7. M7 is the director, right? The topmost guy in the organization. And the dream of every person in the organization, whether he was working as a worker, or whether he was a staff member, or whether he was an executive, was one day to become the manager. Just that designation. When I come to that M1 grade in the organization, right, which is actually the lowest grade in the management hierarchy, I feel so good. Ah, now I become a manager. Of course, all the time when you're in the staff, when you're in the working, you're also managing. But the fact that you have a tag of management, a manager attached to your name, accounts manager, finance manager, you feel that now I've become a great guy. I've become a big person. So that is why the whole concept of designations were created in this corporate world. Because this particular propensity is within us. Every company tries to give newer and newer designations. And then they started becoming companies like banks, foreign banks, where there will be only managers. Right? For the day you join, you become a manager. No worker category, no staff category. Of course, you would be a junior manager, you would be an assistant manager, you would be a manager, you would be a senior manager, but you're a manager, right? You are a junior manager, but you're a manager. Just because of this propensity within us to have this tag of management attached to a name, you have a designation, deputy assistant manager, whatever it means. But still, you're a manager. You're actually doing your own work. You're sitting in a small table in a remote corner of the office. Nobody even recognizes you. But still, you are a deputy assistant manager. And this is carried on to absurd levels. You see in banks, particularly in the public sector banks that we have over here, you have an assistant general manager, you have a deputy general manager, you have so many different types of managers. And a person who moves from an assistant manager to an assistant general manager to a deputy general manager, it takes him 5 years for him to transmigrate from assistant manager to a deputy manager. And he celebrates with champagne, I've now become a deputy general manager. And then he moves on to general manager. And then finally, at the age of 60, he becomes a nobody. Even the same person who is to open the door for him, as soon as his car comes, the darwan makes his way all the way from his office to open the car door for you. The moment you become a nobody, he doesn't even look at you. Such a big letdown. So this false ego of yours at every stage of your life keeps on getting increased and increased and increased. The more and more designations are given to you. Like I was seeing a billboard over here a few days back. What's that billboard? It was saying, cubicles are assigned, but corner offices are earned. The concept of corner offices. In any organization, the corner office is occupied by the boss. Right? The big boss occupies the biggest corner office. Of course, there are 4 corners, but then the biggest office in one corner will be reserved for either the managing director or the general manager or whatever. Right? So cubicle is assigned. As soon as you join the organization, you're assigned to a cubicle. But then you start working, foaming in the mouth, all the while meditating on that particular corner office. When will I move to that corner office? And most organizations, you move to the corner office when you're about to retire. So that is the trick of Maya. That you really, throughout your life, you are struggling so hard to move to the corner office. And finally, when you're moved there, you get kicked out. Straight from the corner office, outside the office. No corner office, no office itself. You are really a nobody. So the Krishna consciousness movement at least opens our eyes to the futility of aspiring for anything in Krishna consciousness. How can we even desire to be somebody over here? That is the beauty of this Krishna consciousness. The moment you think, the moment you want to be somebody over here, there itself we have made the greatest blunder of our life. We are only trying to move from a material situation into a spiritual situation, but our proclivities, our tendencies are remaining the same. And that is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Acharyas and Srila Prabhupada has been emphasizing right from the beginning, Trinadapi Sunichena Tarorapi Sahishnanam Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. There is no other way. We just have to understand that we are insignificant, whatever we may be doing over here. And unless and until we get that deep-rooted into our consciousness that we are really insignificant, in Krishna consciousness, we could be getting attached to what we are doing. Right? And as I said, moment we get attached to anything other than the holy name and the association of devotees or hearing, we are in danger. Particularly management. Because sooner or later, even in Krishna consciousness, we'll have to give up management. Right? Can you imagine a situation where you are 70 years old, right, in Krishna consciousness, your body is failing you, your mind is weak, right, and you're still managing. So difficult. That is just because you're wanting to hold on to that particular position, and if you are managing at that particular point of time, and there are younger people who are more capable of managing who come and take your particular position, what happens? You're finished. You're completely consumed by the false ego, the thought process that somebody has come who is better than me. So that is why companies have understood this particular psychology, right? We should also understand this in Krishna consciousness. How important it is that a person who has put in several years in the organization is, although he is physically unable to be performing his duties, companies still recognize his position and still keep him there till he retires. These are the companies who are human relations friendly. Who are human friendly or human resources friendly. Yeah? They realize that this person has worked at this organization for 35 years. Certainly, this person is incapable of performing his function to the level to which we are expecting him to perform. He has already risen to a very high level in the organization. He has to manage so many people. He has to manage so much resources. But he's physically incapable. And he has got maybe 3 or 4 years to retire. At that particular point of time, if we were to kick out that person from the organization, even though we might give him a huge chunk of money, this person is going to die. Srila Prabhupada would give this example of this judge who was given a very insignificant position. And what happened to him? Human relations experts are today waking up to the realization that even in companies, we have to be doing this. We have to take care of the old people. We have to protect them. So that at the age of 60, they very gracefully retire from the organization with a pot of money, and then they can do whatever activities they want to do. Right? But in Krishna consciousness, ultimately, since we are coming over here to get it into our consciousness, that we are insignificant. At any time, any of our services may be taken away from us. Unless and until we have that particular thing drilled into our consciousness, right? By the process of associating with devotees, by the process of chanting the holy names, by the process of hearing and reading the scriptures, right? We would be in a very dangerous wicket. Because then we would not be able to accept if something happens to the services that we are rendering, we would not be able to accept that it is because of my inability to perform or because somebody else is there who is more capable than me to perform. Yeah. So at the time of death, management, we might be excellent managers, but that management will be of no use to us. What would be only useful to us at the time of death would be how much attached we are to chanting the holy name, how much attached we are to devotees. That is what will help us. Not becoming great kitchen managers, not becoming great Sankirtan managers. Where is your management at the time when you are on your deathbed? Srila Prabhupada, by his own personal example, he demonstrated. Srila Prabhupada was the topmost manager, right? Jagat Guru, Paramhams, Mahabhagwat. Great manager. But when the time came for him to leave his body, he was completely focusing on chanting the holy name, on hearing 24 hours kirtan. He began this just 6 months before he was to leave his body. He began this continuous kirtan, 24 hours kirtan. He never knew. Now I have to prepare my consciousness to leave my body. Translating the Bhagavatam. Meditating on the 10th canto. Srila Prabhupada, I mean, just imagine, Srila Prabhupada is about to leave his body and he had reached the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. How fortunate. How fortunate Srila Prabhupada was able to relish the pastimes of Lord Krishna. And he was giving his purports, Bhaktivedanta purports, in that fragile condition. So Srila Prabhupada, by his own example, showed us that management is not the final thing that you are going to be doing at the time when you are going to be leaving your body. What you are going to be doing is chanting, hearing, associating with devotees. Right? And this we have to remember. Throughout, when we are doing management, we have to remember that at the final stage of our life, we will not be doing any management. We will be only, the only opportunity that will be available to us is to focus on the holy names of the Lord and to associate with devotees and to hear the scriptures. And if we do that in that consciousness, being completely detached, we are attached to management in the sense that it is a wonderful service in Srila Prabhupada's movement to be helping Srila Prabhupada, because even Srila Prabhupada wanted managers. He would praise his managers. He would tell Kuladri Prabhu that, he told Kuladri Prabhu that, you are the best manager that we have in ISKCON. And he had so many good managers. Hamsaduta Prabhu, right? Rameshwar Swami. Wonderful, wonderful BBT managers who really brought BBT to what it is today. Fantastic. The largest publisher of religious books after the Bible in the world. How could it have been possible without the contribution of all these great managers that we had in ISKCON? Right? Completely dedicated their lives. So we need to be a fantastic manager, the best possible manager. Right? If you have a spiritual master telling you that you are the best manager in ISKCON, yes, we should strive to be the best manager in ISKCON. But we have to understand that that is not the be-all and end-all of life. That is not what we have come here to Krishna consciousness for. We have come here in Krishna consciousness to be really aspiring to be the servant of the servant of the servant. To chant the holy names. To increase our chanting. Srila Prabhupada said that it's not 16 rounds that we have to chant. Minimum 16 rounds. As Krishnanand Prabhu time and again keeps telling me that what we have to aspire for is to increase the number of rounds. We cannot be complacent and say that today I'm chanting 16 rounds. Yes, that's what I have vowed before the deities and before the spiritual master that I'll chant 16 rounds. No, we have to consistently strive to increase the number of rounds. Because when we chant more, then we get attached more to the holy name. That's one of the ways by which we can get attached to the holy name. And of course, as Ajamil is doing over here, regret for all the activities that we have done, all the activities that we are doing today, all the activities that we'll be doing in the future. Because this propensity to sin is there within us and it will continue. Till the moment of death. We have this desire for sex life, gross sex life, subtle sex life. This necessity of getting adoration, false prestige, pride. This is all there within us. Deep rooted. And if you really want to make this as the last life that we have in this material world, there is no other way except to be attached to chanting the holy names, attached to reading the scriptures, attached to the devotees of the Lord. Not being attached to management. Thank you very much. It's getting late. So please forgive me if I have been a little bit more. Are there any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. You're saying that ultimately management is not the ultimate thing for us in Krishna consciousness. I want to get a little more clarification. In sense of applying ourselves to still the same chanting and hearing, are we simultaneously not managing ourselves? We may not manage others, but ultimately we will manage ourselves also. I don't know.
Management means whether it manages, whether we have to manage ourselves?
Yeah.
Yes, of course. We have to understand that the ultimately the spiritual master is the one who is going to release us from the cycle of birth and death. Right? We cannot do anything by our own endeavor. And if the spiritual master wants us to be engaged in management, at the cost of our other practices of Krishna consciousness, then we are protected automatically. Just like how it happened in the case of Srila Prabhupada, in Vrindavan, we had one of his sannyasi disciples who was looking after management, hardcore management, managing resources, managing people, building the Krishna Balaram temple. And this devotee came to Srila Prabhupada and said, "Srila Prabhupada, I'm completely confused and bewildered and tired of this management. Everybody around over here is chanting the holy names, associating with the devotees, attending Mangalarti programs, and all the time that I'm thinking, where will I get cement? Where will I get bricks? Where will I get this? Where will I get that? I'm not even able to chant my rounds." So then Srila Prabhupada told him that for you, the most important activity is to build the Krishna Balaram temple. Right? Of course, you have to chant your rounds. But don't be so much focused upon chanting 64 rounds just because you're in Vrindavan. Chant your rounds, but ensure that you're focusing on. Not that Srila Prabhupada told him to completely compromise on his sadhana, but he told him that for you, the main focus of activity is to build the Krishna Balaram temple. So with that instruction also comes the empowerment and the protection to our Krishna consciousness. Right? So we don't have to worry about that. Once we surrender to the instruction of the spiritual master, then we are protected. So, but as far as managing ourselves is concerned with regard to our time, and that as a devotee, every person over here, whether he's a manager or whether he's just a humble devotee who is washing pots and pans, doing backup service in the deity room, he has to be managing his time. So that when we associate with senior devotees and take their guidance, then they are able to help us as to how best we can regulate our activities by which we can give that much amount of time for our spiritual activities. Yeah. Fortunately, Radha Gopinath Temple, we have the advantage that the brahmacharis have very strong sadhana. Right? You have to chant your rounds in the morning, except of course, you are doing deity dressing or doing backup service. Most of the devotees sit together to chant the... So the emphasis on chanting is there right from the morning program. Not that you just go anywhere you want and chant your rounds. We have to sit in the temple hall, chant our rounds. Right? So automatically, by the process of the practice that is there in the temple, there is a regulation in our life. And by that, we can manage ourselves better. So thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Chai. Gaur Premanandi.